Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast.
Frozen, frozen heroes. Gonna tell you about frozen, frozen heroes. Gonna tell you about
comic books,
costumes,
facts,
boots,
and other stuff.
In this week's issue, comics, Joe, Jack, and Stan.
Welcome into Bros, Foes, and Heroes. I'm Zach, joined as always by the marvelous one, Mr. Mike.
Hello.
How are you doing today,
sir? I'm okay, man. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I think
always like the Tom and Jerry shirt.
Thank you. I wear it far too often, but it is the shirt that I own that probably has gotten me the most compliments.
The most comms.
I was like comments, but no, I was
most
like
comps.
They've been pretty favorable. So I'll say
every time I wear this, I get a free pest control service. You get a lot of comps.
Like, hey, like that shirt. Next time you need your house treated for termites.
Or mice. Or cats.
Or anything, give us a call.
That is tough to find right there. An exterminator that gets rid of cats. That's a tough one.
Well, why?
I don't know. Maybe your house is overrun with cats.
At that point, I think it's something you did.
Right. Well, and I would venture to say that probably at least half, if not more, of the reasons you have pests are something you did.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I could see that.
I remember having to spray for ants under my chair because I would get up and eat nachos in the middle of the night. So, I mean, that happens.
I remember this. Well, you wouldn't. Would you as much eat nachos as much as just fall asleep while just
yes,
eating something
exactly.
And wake up and be like, oh,
well,
I made nachos?
More than often. More than one time it was nachos.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm just going to assume it was
always nachos.
But I want you to understand what nachos means at midnight and throughout the evening,
uh-huh.
Or throughout the morning, I guess. It just means I throw some chips on a paper plate
uh-huh.
And throw some
cheese on top
on
of it,
and that's it.
Yep.
I just microwave those and eat them.
Yep.
Like a Neanderthal.
While we're speaking.
And by the way, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
If we don't have Monterey Jack or Colby Jack.
Velveeta.
I've started using Gouda.
Gouda nachos?
Gouda nachos, yeah.
How is that?
I have to hold my finger up when I eat them, though. Like,
I think.
It's actually not bad. It's fine. I mean, again, it's 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm eating chips and cheese, so who gives a crap?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You can't be picky. Speaking of food, though, you gave me a gift,
I guess
we'll say.
I did.
A chocolate bar.
Mm-hmm. They're limited edition.
Limited edition Hershey. Hershey.
Hershey's.
Hershey's.
Hershey's. Only the best for your dead folks.
White.
It sounds like a kid's hearse. It's a Hershey. Baby's first hearse.
Oh, man. So it is a white cream with sprinkles and popping candy.
Uh-huh. That's how I've been described before.
I'm going to attempt to try some here in a second.
Yeah, you should.
The thing that I love most about
after you tried, I want to tell you something about it.
Okay, that I didn't know before until I looked at the back is they put like a picture.
Yeah.
To show you what the back of the candy bar looks like.
That's what Abby was pointing out. She was like, look, it shows you what the bar looks like inside.
Like, why don't they just create clear window?
Just,
like, you know, like it's a checker.
It's probably
a piece
easier.
Of metal.
I don't
but
know.
Still,
it has to go to two factories.
Here's the thing, though. When I open it up right there, it doesn't look necessarily like that.
No, I think I think that one's blown up.
Okay, so.
That's how your mouth's going to feel. Blown up. It's white chocolate.
Yeah, I'm going to try this.
And then it has popping candy in it. Listen, the ambulance is already on its way. I heard it. It's an odd sensation, isn't it?
This is weird.
And it's super sweet.
Yeah.
And by the way, when you guys eat those, just remember, I bought them in June. So, just letting you know, this is the end of September. But it's a Hershey's bar. I mean, what the hell's going
to happen?
I
keep chewing by the mic trying to get some pop rock sounds, but it's not there. But that's weird.
It's weird, right? Yeah.
That is really weird.
It's not sensation. I bought it for my grandkids, and they didn't even like it. So, of course, I brought it to work.
Yeah. And you just gave them to us as gifts?
Yeah. That's, I didn't have to tell you all that other stuff. I could have.
No, you didn't. But that's the way to get rid of stuff you don't want, is just give it away as gifts.
That's what I do.
Yeah, I can. It's like popping still in the back of my.
Yeah.
That is weird. So if you hear pops, that's what's going on.
Pop, pop, pop.
But I can only do one of those little squares. That is.
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz.
Oh, what a relief it is.
There you go.
So we talked last week.
And doesn't it feel like you have just like a film on your teeth it now? Does. It's just white chocolate. I can't.
And I
take.
Have that. See, I like white chocolate.
Really?
And, well, I mean, it's not an all the time thing, but like the cookies and cream bars.
Yeah, I'm sure
those aren't bad.
Yeah.
But that is.
I think it has to do with the other ingredients around white chocolate, right? Because like white chocolate almonds would be good or something. You have to have something of substance to go with that mind-numbingly sweet.
Oh yeah,
white chocolate.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So
throw some cookies in it.
Even more sweetness. Last time we met, we talked about a comic that I really enjoyed a lot and cared about a lot, and that was Tom King and Mitch Gerard's Mr. Miracle from 2017-2018. And it's something I wanted to cover, but then we discussed of how I thought that since there's so much nuance and backstory to it that can be enjoyed more if you know kind of the comic book landscape as a whole, we kind of got the idea then to just talk about the history of some of this stuff.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, specifically, I'm going to tell part of the story in getting us to be able to cover Mr. Miracle. That's the goal there. But I'm going to start and give just a broad overview of a lot of things. I'll dive in more into some things. Other things I won't dive into as much.
Sure.
And there's a specific part of this history that we're focusing on. Mainly, it's the relationship between Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, which starts back in the 40s and goes on through ever.
Yeah.
And it is very integral to, I would say, in a lot of ways, to the beginning and start of Marvel Comics as a whole, too. And it's just a big part of the Mr. Miracle story as
well. Well, they were also like friends gone wrong, right?
There's a lot of, there's, and we'll get into a lot of this. Jack's not the only guy like that when it comes to Stan.
Sure.
Steve Ditko's another guy. Yeah. But not to say Spider-Man is. Not to say that, obviously, Stanley doesn't have his friends and the people who love him and stuff, too.
Right.
There's just a mix of.
Sure.
And we'll get into some of this. I think the best place to start when looking
at Stanley doesn't have people that love
him. I know. I'm not. I just don't want to.
He had a family, for God's sakes.
But I think the best place to start is comics were a thing for a while.
Yeah.
Or they have been.
Right.
I think around the turn of the century, you would have like comic shorts, like you think comic strips and stuff like that obviously came before the comic book did.
Well, the single panel stuff too, I think was probably some of the original stuff.
Kid in the Yellow Shirt or something like that. It's like the 1870s maybe before. Yeah, and all it is it's a kid.
How do they freaking know he's in yellow? It's
1800. Well, some of them they print in color still.
No.
Yeah.
They had to like press the flowers, squeeze the juice out, and then rub it on
but
the paper.
The whole thing was like the jokes were his shirt would say different things. So it's kind of like, you know, but it's
so
early form still.
On the shirt, you would get like thoughts and other things that you
yeah, but it wouldn't be
express.
Exactly. Yeah. But it wouldn't necessarily be, you know, something like very simple.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I interrupt you right in the middle. No, it could be like what?
Oh, I was just gonna say it could be, you know, different political statements or something. Like it was just like a billboard in a way to put joke there.
He would wear those.
Yeah.
And say I'm with Hitler.
Yeah.
Or something.
It's funny. We'll get into that because
so
there's no better place to talk about
it's
than comic
Nazis.
Book podcasts. Yeah.
I wanted to do a comic strip for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted to try it. You know, especially with the advent of like internet comics and stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know, I just thought, just put something out for the heck of it.
Why not?
The issue is the story, right? Is having to come up with something ancient every time.
Oh, see,
that's a rough one.
That's the part that I can do. It's just
really?
The putting the. Mm. I
can do the pen to paper thing.
See, I can write it. I can come up with the idea. But if it's in comic form, actually making, you know, manifest and making something that people would want to look at while they read.
I could probably do the single panel. It's okay, now I got to draw the same character in three panels or whatever, and that just, I don't know, that scares me.
No, I get that. So.
I'm a one-panel man.
I get it. Hey, sometimes that's all you need.
In a one-panel van.
Is there nothing on the other side of the van?
Then? No. Okay. No, it's open on the other side. Open concept.
But, so, we get the first comic book in a way of where printing presses looking to, because it costs a lot of money to keep those things going.
Yeah, sure.
So, overnight, hey, we need something to do. Like, we need something to print on them. So, they came up with the idea of basically collections of all the strips of comics.
Yeah, sure.
That they would put in then with, like, you know, your Sunday paper and stuff like that. And those would be essentially the first comic
the
books.
The funny pages.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Fast forward to 1937, where Superman becomes a massive craze. And that kind of kicks off the comic book boom then at the time. Of everybody wants to hop in on it. 2 years later, you get Batman from DC Comics, which, if you wanted to know, that was National Comics at the time. DC does stand for Detective Comics.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. Huh. So, essentially, that's where the Detective Comics is where Batman got his issue 27. But still, it was one of the titles that they did. They just
calm it down just a little bit with the whole issue 27 thing.
I'm a massive nerd. If it can't come out here, where else can it come out?
That's true.
So,
you don't want to take that kind of stuff home.
Exactly. Now, the other company at the time was ran by a man named Martin Goodman.
I'm looking at this mural that we just had painted, and I'm wondering why it ends right there.
Oh, I just noticed that.
It's just a big chunk missing. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, that was just seeing a squirrel run by or something.
So, the other company, Timely Comics, which Martin Goodman owned at the time, produces their first comics around this time under, I think it was Marvel Fantasies. He named the comic Marvel Comics, the comic book itself, which eventually will become the company name. He liked to change names of companies and stuff a lot around the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But that is where we get then the first Marvel Comics in 39 of the Human Torch and Namor, which we've talked about the first appearance of Namor before.
So Namor and Human Torch
are the first
ones.
Two Marvel Comics characters.
I would assume that everybody kind of assumes that it's Spider-Man.
No,
you know?
it's and it's funny
Spider-Man
because
came 60s, yeah.
Yeah. We fast forward a little bit more and to tell the other side of the story. So Martin Goodman has Timely and they have Namor and they have Human Torch, which is different than the Fantastic Four Human Torch.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like it's been forever since I've read it, but it's essentially like the scientist creating this, you know, Human Torch kind of like experiment and this, you know, Frankenstein's monster type thing of him.
He's consumed with it, or he's on another guy.
It's another guy who has the ability to, and eventually, like a later, he'll, you know, I think eventually he has like a whole like, you know, alter ego, and he does the whole like work at the police.
Why can't you just throw water
like
on him?
But I don't know.
Okay,
yeah, I don't get him.
Like water on a grease fire, maybe.
And then
gets
it just
bigger.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's what they start with.
that's what I think of when I think Human Torch, greasy.
And with this comic boom, there is so many other companies that pop up. We've talked about a lot of different comics from a lot of these different companies.
Sure.
A lot of them now in the public domain, obviously, because they didn't last just but a couple of years. And then it all went away. And plus, things just weren't copyrighted the same way they were.
Yeah.
Now. But you'll have so many different publications that pop up. Like there was an Ajax, and there's like Centaur.
Ajax.
Yeah. Like we've covered a lot. MLJ, which became Archie, and then through the years of us doing the show, we have hit on a lot of these, you know, small publishers at the time. One of them was Fox. And it's either Fox Features, Fox Syndicate. I can't remember the name of it, but it's basically Fox Comics, ran by a man named Victor Fox. This is where we will first get our introduction to Jacob Kurtzberg, a.k.a. Jack Kirby, because a lot of these guys, him and Stan Lee, too, both of those are, what do you call them, pen names.
Okay.
Stan's is just Stanley Lieber, so it's just a little bit shorter.
Sure.
But, Jack Kirby is Jacob Kurtzberg. So, Jack meets a man while he's working at Fox.
Do you think it had anything to do with it being like a Jewish last name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. This is the thing is very much so we find out a lot. Like, Jack Kirby was a, I don't want to call him a small man because he's not, but he just, when you see pictures of him, he's not just like a big strapping, you know, just like muscly guy.
Right, sure.
But he is somebody that you would not want to mess with.
Okay.
Like, he is a very serious, talking about Jack Kirby as a person, there's a quote of his that I absolutely love where he talks about he grew up in New York and some of the, you know, just rougher neighborhoods there in the 30s. And he talks about that his mother once, or that they were too poor to go on vacation. So for 1 week, his mother, as a baby, let him sleep out on the fire escape. And he had the, you know, the blast of a time.
Oh, I'm sure.
He tells stories about how, like, they would, he was, you know, part of these, like, street gangs where they would, like, you know, I'd, like, tease guys, run around the corner, wait for him to come for me, and just lay, you know, just beat him up and stuff. Like, a very rough and tumble kind of neighborhood.
Knockout game.
Yep, exactly. So, but also just, it seemed to be a very sweet, loving man, too, at the same time. But, so, Jack is working at Fox, where he meets Joe Simon. That name is important, too, because the two of them together will go on to create Captain America.
Oh, okay.
In 1941. This is how we get Jack Kirby to Marvel the first time. So, still timely comics. Joe Simon, I feel like I'm throwing a lot of names out here.
No, you're still good. Okay. Yeah, I'm following.
So, Joe
I'm
Simon.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Joe Simon, while working at Fox.
Yeah.
Well, I guess let's start back. Let's look at Marvel and Martin Goodman, who was always very much about trying to find the most economical way to do things.
Okay.
So he found out, hey, instead of, he was buying stories from other from these smaller, like, workshops or not workshops, but like studios.
Mm-hmm.
And then just packaging them in his own. And he realized, hey, instead of paying some of these guys, I can pay just like the editor of one of the places to come up with content for me, and then he can, you know, he can just create it directly for me. I don't need to buy from everybody else.
Yeah.
We'll just create more stuff in-house, which makes sense. Sure.
Instead of buying from everybody, I bring one guy inside.
And so the guy he brings in is Joe Simon.
Oh, okay.
And Joe Simon, who, working at Fox, he and Jack Kirby have become really good friends. The two of them would work together for, like, years, 20-something years together, off and on. But, yeah, so he's like, all right.
So
and
Jack
he brings
Kirby,
the,
Joe Simon. Working at Fox.
Working at Fox. But Martin Goodman's like, I can bring them over, work for me.
Mm-hmm.
They come in there now working for Timely Comics, a.k.a. what will eventually be Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe Simon, Jack Kirby, while at Marvel, create Captain America.
Okay.
Massive, you know, boom there too for them at the time.
This
41.
41.
The thing that is so funny.
That's why it's so massive.
Exactly. Yeah. And it also goes, this is to, you know, I'm pretty sure that Joe Simon is to, you know, individuals from Jewish immigrant families too.
Yeah, yeah,
this
sure.
is very
sure.
important to them.
Yeah.
So, while they're there, I found this funny in reading through everything, and there's some great books. Slugfest, the Marvel Comics, The Untold Story by Sean Howe. There's a lot of great stuff out there that covers a lot of this stuff more in depth. But it's just interesting to me at the time that even though that was going on, Martin Goodman at Timely made them refer to Hitler as Hiller. And it was never Nazis because they were, and we've talked about this before, he was afraid that they would get sued.
Yeah.
So, but then.
Sued by the Nazis.
But then once it looks like, okay, we're entering World War II, that the first issue of Captain America is Captain America punching Hitler in the face.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
And it was at that point, it Hitler. Was like, all right, this is, yeah, but it was, this is what we need to do. And there was even concern that he might be dead before the comic, like the cover was going to print in 41. Granted, that wasn't the case, but, so Stan Lee, is how he fits into all this. Is through being related to Martin Goodman.
Okay.
So the owner of Timely Comics, Marvel Comics, who has just hired Joe Simon to come and do stories for them.
Right.
And he brought Jack Kirby along. Stanley Lieber is his nephew.
Oh.
So his mother was like, hey, Stan, you know, he has dreams of writing this, you know,
yeah,
great American novel. He can't seem to find a place to stick on anywhere else. Is there something you could do, like you could have for him there? So I think like the last, he had worked at a dress factory before. I don't remember what it was. He was at some factory beforehand before he finally got into comics. And it was him going there and essentially finding the owner, finding a job for his nephew there.
Okay.
They describe, I say they, as in Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, describe a young Stan Lee as somebody who was constantly making noise, constantly going around, like, trying to be in people's business.
I bet.
We talked about, you brought up the ocarina earlier.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about Zelda.
Yeah, sure.
And I told you, oh, we'll talk about it later.
Right.
So apparently Stan would just play it in the office.
Just play an ocarina.
Like walk around, just playing.
So an ocarina is almost like a pan flute kind of
in a way. So it's like it looks like a potato with holes in it.
Oh,
I don't know, just the shape of it. It's kind of oval. It's, you know, it's hollow and puffed up on the inside.
Do you know?
I don't know right offhand.
Okay.
But so yeah, that was he would go while they were trying to work, and he would just sit there and play the ocarina and stuff like that. So a young Joe Simon and Jack Kirby didn't necessarily like, they did not like him, but they were just like, he's kind of a lot sometimes.
Shut up. Yeah.
Yeah. So what we have here is where we already will get tension very early on between the two of them.
Late 19th century from Italian, from acca, meaning goose, referring to its shape.
Okay. So, oh, okay.
Looks like a goose body, I guess.
It does look like a goose body.
There you go.
I'm about to get into then the first of many problems that will happen between Jack and Stan. And we will get into that right after this.
Excitement!
All right, and welcome back in.
My thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that quick little break. Let me pick back up where we were. So while Joe Simon and Jack Kirby,
let me be clear too. I know that there were rumblings between the two and all that stuff. I just don't know the specifics.
Yeah.
So I don't think most people do.
No, and the thing is I plan on covering this in little chunks.
Yeah.
This is going to take us to the next big thing. Which
that was my name in grade school.
Oh, was it?
Little Chunks.
So I'll explain the story path we have here. So I'm giving us pre-Fantastic Four.
Okay.
This is essentially the story leading up to what would make Marvel Comics Marvel Comics, and that is the creation of the Fantastic Four between the two of them.
Sure.
And we will touch on that a little bit before we go, or before we wrap up the show today. Like that's where I'm going to take you to.
Okay.
I thought about. And I still might do it too for next week, like covering the comic itself then, after we talk about it, just to kind of see.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's
so, we're going to focus on the very first Fantastic Four next week and everything in that, but I'm taking it up.
I learned so much during this show.
I'm glad.
I really do. Yeah. And it has come up more than once in conversation.
Twice?
People will bring I tried to rephrase that, but I didn't know what to say. So it has come up before, like you know, somebody will say something, I go, oh, I remember that from, you know.
No, I'm glad I can.
Yeah, it's great. I love useless knowledge. You know what I mean?
I've had to quit calling it useless just to not make myself feel better. It's
I
just
get that.
Random.
Yeah, random knowledge.
There
that's
we go.
That's bad.
So while Joe and Jack are working for Martin Goodman at Timely, they realize somebody else that they had worked for before lets them know, hey, Martin's stiffing you guys. Like, he's taking the money that from some of, I think it was maybe the sales from Captain America, or it could have just been, like, the page rates or whatever. But still, he wasn't paying them the full amount that they thought or they had agreed to, kind of whatever.
Bastard.
Yeah. So the two of them, frustrated, decide, well, then we'll just work other places and just not tell him about it. Like, if he doesn't want to, you know, pay us everything we can, like, we can come up with more ideas.
Yeah.
We can sell it ourselves to the other studios then, and we can make, you know, more money for ourselves that way.
Makes sense.
So what they did is they started getting, they got a hotel room downtown, and after they would get off from work, they would go to the hotel room and they would work on new stories there together before they would go off
so
and go home.
They're working in the comic book industry all day long.
And then they go, they leave there to go to a hotel room to work on more comic books.
Wow.
Because they were putting together their own stuff to be able to set
out
to make that money.
Deeply immersed in comics.
It is. There's talks a lot too about Jack Kirby as a person, of how he very much always liked to have work lined up, mm-hmm. even if he was fine. Just being like that, you know, the child of the Depression era in a way. Like, you always wanted to have work.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And so they would go after they would get off to the hotel room and work on more stuff. It got to the point where they started enjoying working on the other stuff more than they did the mm-hmm. Marvel stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And they would even, on lunch breaks, go to the hotel room just to work on that stuff.
Wow.
So a young Stan Lee decides, or is noticing, like, hey, these guys are up to something. Like, what are y'all doing? What are y'all going on? Yeah. What's going on? And they're just like, hey, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And he apparently pesters them enough about it to where, I don't remember if it's Joe or if it's Jack, one of them's like, yeah, that's fine. You can come with us to lunch.
Mm.
And they're like, and for like a couple days, just like 2 days, he came with them. But they quoted, he was more in the way than actually helping.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
While they were there.
He seems like a guy that would just be bouncing off
the
walls.
He is. And let's also take, like, I think this is like a 16, 17-year-old Stan Lee too. Maybe even 18. Like, this is young Stan.
Yeah.
Okay. So you saw how charismatic he was as a
man. Yeah, I can't even imagine.
So, and but eventually, like, you know, they say that they work on that. He is kind of in their way a little more than anything else. But mm-hmm. then I don't know if he just quits going or what. A couple days after that, though, Jack tells the story as he's sitting there working at the Marvel offices, are Timely still at the time, drawing, and like people just kind of come. It's like, I guess the underlings of Martin Goodman. I can't remember the guy's name, but it's like the, and he just walks over and he just stands by them. And he's like, you think that you could get away with, you know, like undercutting Martin Goodman all this time? Well, you're done working here.
Wow.
And,
so just those Jack, two though, right?
Yep. Jack and Joe are gone because they were working and doing their own thing under one. Both of them believe that they were outed by
Stan.
Which, that's fine. You know,
sure.
Young, it's not, but you know, it's the
I know what you're saying.
Nephew of the owner. Young, they obviously still work together, so they got over it at some point in time. It led to Jack Kirby and Joe Simon being let go there.
Mm-hmm.
This leads to Jack Kirby does go and is serves over sees during World War II.
Oh.
Including, and he sees a lot of shit over there.
Sure.
Yeah. They find out that he
World War II, famously known for its shit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
They find out while in the group that he's over there with, they talked about, like, he helped liberate, for lack of a better term, a concentration camp while they were there.
He was actually the subject of Freeing Private Ryan or whatever.
Well, I mean, but not that specific. Yeah. But no, like, he and his group. Yeah, you're fine.
Sure.
He and his, you know, group were a part of that.
Sad
and
that that's the best I could come up with.
It's good. They found out that he was a comic book artist, and so they turned him into a scout then because he could draw.
Oh.
So they would make him go ahead, like, which is kind of dangerous.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Go ahead, check everything out, and he would have to go back and draw maps for them all.
Like a court reporter.
Yeah. But they're just like, oh, you draw comics? All right, you're our scout now. Go up there and draw everything for us.
Kind of makes sense.
So he would have to go up, sneak into towns, like, try not to get caught and do all that.
Wait, he'd have to come back and draw it from memory?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Or he would take it with him and, like, you know, draw what was there.
Sure, yeah, sure.
The stories he tells of just, like, the things that he witnessed and saw over there, like, it very much adds to the whole, when you think, like, not meaning this in any negative tone whatsoever, but when you think of how some artists can, you know, find beauty in things and all this chaos, it's very much like the floating paper bag in American Beauty. Right. But the stories he told and that I've listened to him tell and read and stuff about things that he saw in war, and just about, like, he would be like, it's horrifying, but oddly beautiful at the same time kind of stuff.
I can
you
see
get
that.
How, yeah. And I think it definitely influenced his work on a lot of stuff from there forward. But while he's in the war, he gets frostbite on his foot.
Okay.
And there's worry that they might actually have to amputate it and stuff. So he has to stay back in a medical hospital while the rest of his group goes off on their next mission. Jack Kirby is the only surviving member of that battalion then.
Okay.
So he comes back now after all this stuff, and he hooks back up with Joe Simon, and they start working on producing their own comic books again. They try to find what's, you know, big, what's popular. But also, while they're working together, something happens in the 50s, which we've talked about before, and that was, it's the early 50s with Dr. Frederick Wortham and just the panic about how awful comic books were and how they were, you know, corrupting today's youth. And
yeah.
It just caused it to almost kill the comic book industry as a whole.
We've kind of talked about that in a bunch of different areas, you know, whether it's pool or comic books or whatever, anything new, Elvis's hips, whatever.
It's always going to be something. But and it almost killed what it was.
These days it's porn. People are crazy. Well, it's not going to turn the kids weird.
But well, it depends on which one.
Sure.
But
mostly foot stuff.
But
it's amazing how many times foot stuff comes up in this podcast about comic books.
You're the one who always brings it up.
I know. Though. I'm sorry.
I'm not saying that. You know.
I just think it's so weird.
Thou protest too much, but still.
Gross.
But to combat and try to help out. Find new ways to make things work in the comic book industry. I think we've talked about this before. The two of them essentially created romance comics then too.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Like they were like, all right, like they want to, you know, go after everybody for the crime and all. They were trying to find ways to be
a niche that nobody was addressing.
Yep. So the two of them created romance comics.
Okay.
Granted romance existed, but
were romance comics popular?
Well, they became popular then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that kind of helped in the 50s and stuff there. Like, they're responsible for kind of helping.
Seems like a narrow audience.
It is very. But, like, things I've read, I haven't gone back and read any of them because it's just not.
Yeah, sure.
Things that, I don't know.
Too fat for love.
I take that back. I go back and read them because they're funny on some of them. But I think that it was just like, hey, here's something new, maybe.
Too fat for love. I forgot that one kills me every time.
She was so upset that he didn't shave. Remember?
Yes. What have I married?
Yes.
This beastly
beast.
Man.
Oh, man. I'm going to need to do some more of those. Those are great.
it was literally the next morning.
Yeah.
She was questioning her wedding.
Because he didn't shave.
Idiot.
So that's what gets Jack. I've kind of covered in a brief, like, scattershot Jack up to. I'm trying to get us to the early 60s.
Sure.
Stan, during that time, after Joe and Jack are gone, he still stays with Timely Comics the whole time. He himself, once World War II comes, he enrolls.
Yeah.
He felt like he wanted to do something. Poor guy, they found out that he could write, and so just like, hey, you know, with Kirby, oh, you can draw stuff, you're going to be a scout. So they would make him write posters and stuff, including things about venereal diseases.
Sure, there was
like
a lot
that.
Of that. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was like the writer for,
the
you know, different
enemy, that kind of thing.
Different army propaganda. But also at
this
the
is
time,
still World War II?
Yep. He would still be able to write stories for Captain America while he was there. And so like he would sign them Private Stan Lee when he would write and stuff. But he is still working for Timely. The war is over. He comes back. This is when he kind of gets put in place of being over the comics division as a whole.
Okay.
There's still some, you know, I don't know the exact hierarchy, but he's over a lot of it. They had been having trouble before of where artists missing deadlines and stuff like that. So whenever they had extra stories and stuff, Stan would save it just kind of for a rainy day to make sure, hey.
Yeah, that's smart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, what happened is eventually he started hiring better people and more people to where the amount of leftover stuff they had was just piling up in a closet.
Sure.
Well, one day, Martin Goodman comes across all this unused inventory.
Okay.
And tells Stan, why haven't we used it? Fire everybody else. We're going to use this.
Oh, my gosh.
So Like, this has been I do feel bad for Stan on this a lot. So he has to.
Yeah.
Right. They talk about, like, during the heyday of, like, the 50s and stuff, they installed a little voice box. You know how you can, like,
yeah,
page
like
people
intercom.
Or something? Like,
yeah.
And that Stan would have to come on. Like, Martin would go into his office, talk, and they'd leave. And then Stan would have to come on and be like, so-and-so, come into my office.
Oh,
and they started calling it the bitch box, is why they referred to it there.
Well, it's like here, honestly, we have a door on the other room here that they say that the vice president of the company, that was his office, and he had a button underneath his desk. And where he pushed the button, it would shut the door. You knew if you were called in his office and he shut the door automatically that you were fired.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, poor Stan, in just trying to always, they also talked about that he was really big about trying to get, the artist rates like paid, because Martin Goodman was kind of cheap of him. He would constantly go in and try to fight for it. It was a losing battle, but
wait,
still,
the guy who wanted to use all the leftover inventory was cheap.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And so once he found all the leftover inventory, he made Stan go in and fire everybody.
Sure.
The story that I read that is just so, like, I don't know what to call it touching, but just about the moment, is his secretary at the time said that he would call somebody in, he would talk to them, have to fire them, and then he would leave, go to the bathroom, throw up, go back, call the next person in, and it was just like that all day long.
That's rough.
So,
firing people is not great.
No,
it's not fun.
It's not.
Occasionally it's fun. But not
if it's deserved.
It's according
to
who it is.
So Stan is now back with Timely. They're having to use up all of this leftover inventory. And because of the panic about comic book sales are dwindling. It depends on who you ask, how the story goes. One is if you ask, I'm paraphrasing these essentially. Mm-hmm. One is if you ask Stan, he essentially kind of gets told, or gets the opportunity then with them being, you know, kind of on their last legs of being able to tell the stories that he wants to, and he does.
Yeah.
Eventually this leads to Fantastic Four. If you listen to the story that Jack Kirby tells, because he had been brought back because they did need artists eventually, just like one or two. Mm-hmm. And Stan did always love Jack's work. Like, that's the thing is you can't deny that the respect that at least, you know, I think the two of them had as for professionals for each other. But so he's there at the, you know, when he shows up at the company, Jack says that he's watching them like carrying couches and desks out of the office. Like, cause it's just that bad. Yeah. And he goes, and Stan's just sitting there crying. And I tell him, son, you know, Jack is very much a storyteller, man.
Okay.
And he's like, you know, wipe those tears. I'm going to write us some stories, or I'm going to draw some stories that are going to get us back on the map. Good. Let's go ahead and do this.
Okay. Stan's like, thanks, mister.
Thanks. Yeah. So what we get then here is we find through pure happenstance, Martin Goodman is out playing golf with, Jack Leibowitz. I don't know. I can't remember who the head of DC is at the time.
Okay.
And he's telling them, hey, I'm putting together this book. It's called The Justice League. Mm. It's great. It has all of our heroes in it. And it is selling so well. Mm-hmm. And he's just going bragging on and on about this. So Martin Goodman comes back from the golf game and essentially tells Stan Lee, steal that idea.
I want one of those.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so this leads us to where we will pick up the next week, which is Fantastic Four number one. If, depending on how or who you want to believe, there's two different stories to all this. That's how a lot of this is going to be, though, too. Through a lot of, at least for me, through the comic book history I've read, is it's hard to be able to know, all right, I sit here for sure, I sit here for sure, because it's off of just what others say. There's things you can go off of and be like, okay, I can see how maybe I lead more credence to this thought, or I lead more credence to this. But it's going to be open, and there will be things that, you know, you can make your own decisions for. But essentially, the two stories go, Jack Kirby had done some work on Challengers of the Unknown, which is a DC title for the 50s. That's where he was working after the Romance Comics, and he and Joe Simon's partnership didn't work. He went and he found work at DC. He also himself had a published comic strip called Sky Masters that he did too, very science fiction stuff. Yeah. So he constantly still had work in comics.
Sky Masters.
Where it's about four people who, normal people, who get, like, there's a lot of...
Same thing.
Yeah. And then Stan will tell you, or would tell you the story about how it just came, you know, how he wanted real characters that didn't, you know, that had real problems and stuff like that. Both varying degrees of understandable when you look at it. But we will dive into that a little bit more. One thing I wanted to close out with, just to kind of tease so you know where we're headed with this.
Yeah.
Because I think it encapsulates the two just very well. In the beginning of Sean Howe's book, the Marvel, The Untold Story, he has a quote from both Stan Lee and a quote from Jack Kirby. And to me, it just shows you the two type of guys and their personalities going into this.
Okay.
And I think it's the best place to end before we get to next week. So, in the beginning, Marvel created the bullpen and the style. And the bullpen was without form and was void. And darkness was upon the face of the artist. And the spirit of Marvel moved upon the face of the writers. And Marvel said, "Let there be the Fantastic Four." And there was the Fantastic Four. And Marvel saw the Fantastic Four, and it was good. Stan Lee.
Wow.
Ideas can never be traced to any one source. They are tossed back and forth between people. Hold on. They are tossed back and forth between people until the decision makers step in and choose what they think a success formula is.
I see.
Jack Kirby.
Well,
so
that does kind of tell you the both sides of
So we know getting in here that we have people on both sides of the coin. One who is always full of just vim and vigor and
positivity,
bravado.
Yeah.
And the other,
and he's all about the team, the bullpen, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Like, he's like that, and he always pushes that, even when that's not the case.
Yeah.
Like, I will have audio next week when we get into there from Alan Moore, who we've talked about before.
Sure.
Who talks about, like, you know, he says, "I got to meet Jack Kirby. I got to meet Steve Ditko." Mm-hmm. And once you meet them, you wonder, well, how come Jack's not jolly and Steve's not sturdy? And he goes, and it was because Stan was always smiling. Mm. So there's a lot of just, I don't know. We're going to get into all this. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I like diving into the
history. Stan was
stuff.
Just basically the built-in mascot for the most part, right? You know, he was the face of the company.
He was, but then there's things where I think some people feel like credit was taken when it wasn't deserved. And that's what's going to, like, this is what's going to lead to a lot of it. There's a Variety article that we're going to get in that is the main problem. It was either Variety as, I don't know. No. It was like the Village Voice. What am I talking about?
Okay.
But it was a paper, an article written about how Marvel Comics work and just how, like, untrue those who worked there felt about it and felt like it was just a piece that just showcased things. Like, that is the critical point for a lot of it, too. All of it's just very interesting to me. So, we're going to break down just more, history of the behind the scenes stuff, because that's interesting as
It's
just
super
as much
cool,
as a story to me.
Yeah, I enjoyed this.
All right,
yeah, this is fun. I like the story time.
Thank you. So next week, Fantastic Four, and we'll get into.
I'm going to ask you one question about Fantastic Four. Was Galactus part of it from the beginning?
No. Okay. So Galactus comes in around 48, 50.
Okay.
The story there, and I've told it before, and I hope I can find it when we get there.
Sure.
Because I love the quote is. Again, because I think I brought it up the other day when we talked
about
it. Is it Marv Wolfman or somebody else was like, essentially, Stan Lee just told Jack, "I want a story where the Fantastic Four meet God."
Yeah.
And he created all of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But no, that was like 15. It gets
always
so.
My favorite.
Yeah. Silver Surfer. That's him. It's all great.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I can't think of Silver Surfer without thinking Galactus. So,
yep. Because he's the air. Like, that's the thing, too, is he did such a good job. Is like, I. Oh, man. See, I should save some of this, but I'm sure some of it I'll forget, too, so it's fine to tell now. They talk about, like, when Jack turned in the pages with it when he first did the Silver Surfer, like, Stan's flipping through looking at him, and he's like, "Who is this guy? Like, what is?" And he's like, "Well, I figured if they're going to face somebody, like, as big and bad as Galactus, he should have a herald that comes before him to tell him, like, hey, This guy's coming.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the genius of Jack Kirby and all this thing led to a lot of these creations. But so much stuff to get into.
Isn't
all
it weird how so much of this stuff is biblical? And, yeah. You know, well, kind of. I mean, it's just, and I guess it's always been that way, though, because stories come from stories, come from, you know, stuff's handed down over the years,
well,
all that stuff.
Well, for Kirby.
It's interesting.
For Kirby especially, he was very much into, like,
witchcraft.
Mythology and stuff. Like, he did Thor and stuff like that. He loved that. All of his stuff, if you look at, he is very much into just mythology and even just, you know, the religious tones. It's like just the stories.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see it play out.
I mean, they're all great stories.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at it as like a story, then biblical tales are good stories.
Yeah.
You know, and there's certainly good places to start with these type stories.
Yeah.
You know, because it's stuff people are familiar with. It's still hero's journey, all of that kind of stuff.
And that's, you know, that was the whole idea that he had. And we'll get into it more of what led him to the creation of like a Doom, or not Doom, of Darkseid and Mr. Miracle and the Forever People. And
Forever People. I've never heard of them.
Yeah. And what is the last one? It's a four. The New Gods, when he went to DC, was in his head. What he wanted to do is he had been preparing and drawing Thor leading to Ragnarok. Like, that was his, like, he was, he loved mythology.
Yeah.
And what he wanted to do after Ragnarok is essentially introduce complete new gods into Thor then. Be like, hey, it wiped everything out like it would.
Yeah, sure.
This is what it is.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, like, Thor sells well. We'll just keep doing Thor. Yeah. So then, like, some of those ideas that he had there, he kept and then used later. See, I'm just going to ramble about this all day if I have
to. You're good. You're good. Hey, I wanted to suggest something for down the line.
Yes, sir.
I would love to know, and you could pick maybe five or six of them or whatever, but throughout the years, I've noticed that if DC comes out with a character, Marvel comes out with their own version. If Marvel comes out with a character, DC comes out with their own version.
You
want to
know about the
knockoffs? Yeah, I would love to know about the origin and the knockoff. Origin and knockoff. You know, I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, no, we can for sure do that too. And there is a lot, like you said. It's one trying to keep up with the other on a lot of them.
Vampires? Oh, we got those.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, it's
well, like,
all the time.
Yeah. It's just so funny. Some of them are so blatant too.
Sure.
But.
Yeah.
Yep. So, as always, thank you guys for taking the time out to listen. I'll just keep giving history lessons. But next week, we'll cover an actual comic then, too.
No, this is fantastic, man. I really enjoyed it. I think it's cool. I think this is a cool little series we're doing.
Yeah. So, I'll be excited once we get this all done. And then now I have another idea of knockoffs to do as well.
Yeah, I love that.
As always, thank you for taking the time to listen. And until next week, stay safe, everybody.
Golly con.
Frozen heroes, gonna tell you about frozen heroes, gonna tell you about.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.
Hey, I'm the Fonza. I see.
Can you hear it?
Oh, yeah. It's subtle, but I can hear it, yeah.
That's so weird.